This is WordPress Weekly, your source for the latest news, plugins, and interviews with influential leaders in the WordPress community. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Marcus Couch.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 234 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, May 11th, 2016. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by my New Orleans partner, Marcus Couch. Marcus.
Hey.
Are you drowning in gumbo yet?
No, I did have some shrimp and grits and a couple of other things, but it's nice to be in New Orleans. I am here on behalf of a client that they have their annual conference here. And it kicked off, Jeff, last night with a kind of a Dixie New Orleans band that led a full parade of the 800 attendees with a police barricade down to Bourbon Street. So I'd never been in a Dixie parade before, but it was pretty amazing.
That's nice. See, I kind of think about what it would be like if I did client work and then I only picked my clients that I could like get perks from. So I do web development for a yacht company or a dude who's into yachts, and I can get free rides on his yacht anytime I want whenever I'm in the area. I mean, that's the kind of stuff I want to do if I was in client work, not all the other boring stuff.
Well, yeah, that's once a year, right.
Anyways, all right, so we got a lot to get into. In fact, I think we have two special guests. One is extra special, and her name is Andrea Middleton. And she works for Automattic as a community organizer on the WordPress open source project. She resides in Portland, Oregon, friend of the show. She's a kick-ass mother of two and enjoys wine. And she also helps – she does a lot of the work and helps out WordCamp organizers behind the scenes. And we're going to dive into all things WordCamps with her during the show. When's the last time we had her on? It was sometime last year. But that was a great show. And there's been a lot of things that have taken place in the WordCamp scene since then. So, Andrea, thank you very much for taking some time out of your schedule to be on the show again.
I'm happy to be here, Jeff. Thanks for inviting me. And Marcus.
You're welcome.
Now, we know you enjoy your bubbly, so why don't you tell our audience what wine you are drinking today?
Oh, today at the tavern, I'm enjoying a nice little glass of the...
I like that.
Piper Sonoma Brut. It's a non-vintage sparkling wine from California. You can usually find it right around $15 or $16 per bottle, so it's a great everyday drinking wine. If you get a little stopper to keep your bubbly bubbly, you can have a glass every night and be happy for the rest of your life.
Nice. I love that little at the tavern perk. That's very appreciative. So, like I said, a lot of things have gone on since the last time you were on the show, and we're going to try and get into some of them in no particular order. But the one that's been on my mind and one that I think is maybe the most significant is this new subsidiary that was created. We know that the WordPress Foundation was used as a funnel and sort of a liability source of protection for WordCamp organizers when they organize events. But now there's this new subsidiary that's been created. Can you tell us more information about it, why it was created, and what its purpose is?
Yeah, happy to. So we've been using the WordPress Foundation for, 5 years or so now as the legal and financial entity behind WordCamps to protect WordCamp organizers both legally as well as financially, and so that nobody gets sued or, heaven forfend, audited by the IRS as a result of their organizing a WordCamp.
I think we might have mentioned this the first time you were on the show, but yeah. Back before the foundation offered this legal protection to organizers, there were some issues and things that happened where people tried to take legal action against WordCamp organizers for one reason or another.
Yeah, there were, I mean, almost every innovation that we introduce comes from a problem that somebody had. And I can't speak specifically to the cases that from which this practice arose, but it became quite obvious pretty soon or around, you know, 2009, 2010, that if the WordCamp program was going to keep growing, we needed to make it safer for people to organize and also make it possible for people who didn't have $15,000 sitting around in a bank account or a $20,000 credit limit on a credit card that was open to be able to manage, you know, to be able to run a WordCamp, right? So one of the things that I am really, really proud of as far as the financial, you know, using the foundation as the financial entity behind WordCamps is that you don't have to have any amount of liquidity or financial back, you know, any kind of financial, particular financial background to be a WordCamp organizer, because all of that money runs through the foundation. If the event runs a loss, which we certainly hope it doesn't, but if it does, it doesn't come out of your pocket. And if the event runs a surplus, then that surplus goes back into the fund that helps WordCamps and meetups that have financial problems or, you know, helps fund additional programs. So that's huge because it used to be that WordCamp organizing was pretty restricted only to people with a certain financial status, if you know what I mean. And that's not very WordPressy of us, so that's a big deal. And yeah, I think it has, in the end, been a really spectacular benefit for the program. But then we ran into this thing where in like 2013, I think, we better understood some of the restrictions that the IRS puts on nonprofit organizations, 501c3s, like the WordPress Foundation, when it comes to accepting sponsorship money. And I can get really down into the nitty-gritty of this, but it's not really interesting to anybody but me and other taxi kind of people, which I didn't used to be, but now I am, I guess. And we had to really restrict the way that WordCamps could acknowledge sponsors. And it was really hard on sponsors, and it was also really hard on our organizers. I mean, we struggled with this for years, Jeff. I mean, just a long time trying to help people understand the really specific language people could use, and sponsors had to have special collateral just for WordCamps and all this stuff, and it was just
a special way of setting up the tables and I looked at the guidelines, and it was pretty restrictive.
It was really hard, you know. And I mean, everybody was like, well, I mean, you know, I mean, it's the IRS, what do? Appeal? No. You know. So I mean, we had to do it, but it was, I mean, just, and I kept trying to think of like better education, better examples, da da da. But in the end, it just, as the program continues to grow, it just doesn't seem to scale, right? This level of restriction, and if we're going, you know, and it's hard on our sponsors as well. So we talked to a lot of lawyers, and we talked to a lot of accountants, and then we talked to more lawyers, and you know, really exciting conversations.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
That's super cheap. And finally came up with this solution of creating a subsidiary of the foundation that is a for-profit corporation. And it's a specific kind of for-profit corporation called a public benefit corporation. And the reason that we were really excited to make it a PBC was that the idea with a PBC is that this is a corporation that uses its profits to further the public good, right? And in this case, the public good is WordPress and open source. So we will pay taxes on surplus income, on surplus funds from WordCamps. But hopefully we can make that surplus, you know, not, you know, hopefully that won't be
You know what I'm thinking? Yeah, some extra spending money at these camps. We could throw huge party at WordCamp US.
God. I mean, we don't generally, WordCamps don't run that huge of a surplus anyway, and we do have camps that are, that, you know, don't make their budgets for whatever reason, sponsors pull out, or you know, things cost more than they expected and stuff like that. So that said, I mean, it will cost us more. We will be paying taxes on surplus funds. However, it just seems so much worth it, you know, compared to asking volunteers to try to understand and enforce these really restrictive sponsorship guidelines. It was just too hard for everybody. And so, also, there's an added benefit there, which is also that by not running events through the foundation, we create a little bit of a, as I understand it, a legal
buffer.
Legal buffer, yeah, between the entity that holds the trademark, which is WordPress Foundation, and the possibility of getting sued by a slip and fall or something like that. And, you know, events tend to be litigious things. People sue event organizers, as we have learned. But we have good insurance and everything, and I don't expect anything to happen, but it does feel better to have that slight added protection. So,
just out of curiosity, Andrea, how many of those incidents have happened?
Nothing. We have never been sued. The foundation has never been sued because of a WordCamp. So, but we're super careful. I mean, we're as careful as all of our volunteers are.
Right.
So we're very lucky in our volunteers. But the foundation has never been sued because of an event. So that's great. I just don't want to ever have it happen, quite honestly.
So this subsidiary and its new tax status being a for-profit, does this open up opportunities of funding opportunities different from being the nonprofit status, and what kind of opportunities does it open up from a sponsor's point of view, what they're able to do now at WordCamps?
Well, from a sponsor's perspective, it's pretty good in that it allows the WordCamp program, i.e. the WordPress, you know, community team, to set its own rules. So we were able to get rid of some of those incredibly restrictive things of where you couldn't use a call to action, and you couldn't include pricing information, and you couldn't include any special offers or anything like that. So that is gone. And so we're much more able to act like a quote-unquote normal conference, although, of course, everyone knows that WordCamps are not normal conferences. We did retain, because we really liked it and we didn't want to confuse organizers or attendees, we did retain the only make claims about yourself that are factual. So,
That makes sense to me.
I mean, I just think it's better for the, and I mean, everybody seemed to agree that it was better for the WordCamp program if we require our sponsors to only say things that are provable in a court of law. So, you know, best hosting in the known universe. How do you prove that? But, you know, over, you know, 21 million clients, or, you know, I mean, things that are actually provable and factual, I think asking sponsors to stick to that is quite reasonable, and hopefully doesn't make them have to redo all their collateral just for WordCamps.
So how difficult was it for organizers at the time, or maybe who had camps in and around that time? I mean, what was that transition period like?
Well, I mean, all of your listeners are going to be so bored listening to this transition. I'm so sorry, people. I could talk about interesting things too, I promise. So what we did is we started the bank accounts and all that jazz at the beginning of the year, and we worked some stuff out with our bank, which took forever. And then we accepted. Actually, it worked out well that we did it at the beginning of 2016, because what we did is we billed all of our global sponsors from the subsidiary. So we got basically our kind of upfront nest egg of, because a lot of our global sponsors pay in one annual payment rather than paying on a quarterly basis. And so we had a nice little tidy little sum from some of our global sponsors who paid the year in advance, basically. And then we just started paying out from the subsidiary. And then in March, we shut down. We stopped paying any bills from the foundation. And then as of March 30th, April 1st, it was actually April 1st, but that's April Fool's Day, so I've been trying to avoid saying it. But no fooling, as of April 1st, we stopped accepting income through the foundation and are actually turning around checks. I don't believe we've had any checks returned to sender. But we have had to return one or two PayPal payments. but, I mean, all things considered, it's been pretty smooth. I mean, we had maybe 10 events actually in process, like in active, like collecting money and, you know, paying bills and stuff like that. And I mean, we have had a few cases where sponsors sent money, to where a few checks got lost, but not too bad. Maybe we had like five payments get kind of screwy, but other than that, I mean, that's considering how much income we handle every day, it's pretty admirable.
And one of the reasons I asked this, Jen Milo, I remember a post that she published, and it was, I think, on the Make WordPress community site, or the one specifically about events or WordCamps, and she wrote this detailed long post, and I appreciated the transparency, but in it she sort of suggested because of some issues that there were going on with dealing with the bank, that maybe WordCamp organizers, if they had the ability to make some of the purchases on their own credit cards, and then they would be refunded later. And I'm thinking, oh no, what is going, there must be chaos. What is going on behind the scenes where that would even be a suggestion? So what was going on there?
We just had a delay in the where did we come with that? We really wanted to make the transition earlier in the year. And so we were really hoping that we could like shut everything down by the end of February. And the level of banking, the way the banks refer to them, to their services, is frequently called product. So the level of banking product that we require to be able to pay invoices all over the world with wire transfers and stuff like that is pretty complicated, I guess, for banks to set up for whatever reason. And so it took them like a month longer to get things working the way we wanted them to work. So, you know, I believe if it's the post I'm thinking of, that was back when we were like, let's just push it and do the switch at the end of February. And I was like, we can't. Let's push it and do the switch by the end of March. And then it just gave us a little more time. So we did not have to resort to asking organizers to foot the bill on their own, which...
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. It didn't. And we would never ask anybody to cover a $10,000 check or something on their own. That is not anything that I would ever, ever ask any organizer to do.
So outside of the subsidiary and all that, there's been... quite a few new tools and options and things created around the WordCamp Central website, and maybe even I think there's been an API sort of created where people can download or slurp the event dates or upcoming WordCamps from the WordCamp site. So there's been all kinds of cool stuff like that. Maybe you can give us an update on some of the things that's been developed specifically for organizers on the WordCamp Central website in the past few months.
Well, I'm super excited about our sponsor invoicing tool, because what we have created is a way for the way we used to do invoices. Let me start there. I would give people a Google document that was an invoice template, and then they would make a copy of that Google document invoice template, and then they would edit it each copy, you know, just like with a backspace and typing. And they would have to, you know, basically, you know, erase and create new invoices and then PDF them and send them out one by one manually. And we have created, and then when we got the payment, we would have to go searching in about 5, 10, 15, 20, even 30 different event budgets that are all in Google spreadsheets to see if the sponsor wasn't kind enough to actually tell us what WordCamp the payment was for. We would have to go sifting through this enormous collection of documents to find where the income belonged. And let me tell you, that was hours a day, every day, for a WordCamp Central staff person.
As someone who monitors and reads what's going on with WordCamp Central, the websites and the updates that you people post, I mean, there are WordCamps happening all the time, and they're in various stages, and there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes, a lot of communication, different steps you have to get to with budgets and planning and different stages. And when you're telling me about a process like this, now I understand why some of the organizers were kind of upset, because sometimes there'd be delays or something would be lost and nobody knew where anything was.
Yeah. I mean, it was so manual. I mean, we grow incrementally. And as we grow, we iterate, right? And so we had outgrown the manual tools that we had started using back in 2011, honestly. We hadn't really made any improvements to the way we were handling money since then, which, you know, back when I was, like, there was only me, and I was setting it up. And, I mean, it worked okay for 52 WordCamps a year with only half of those running the money through the foundation. But now that we're up to, like, 89 with, again, still half of those running the money through the foundation, that's a big deal, you know? And if you think about how each WordCamp probably has about 10 invoices get paid, and I mean, it's just really, and then we have like 3 different income streams. It's super complicated. So we created this tool where WordCamp organizers can just go into their dashboard and create a sponsor invoice on the back end, and then just send it to us, and then we send it out through our QuickBooks installation. All of that chaos didn't even touch like the monthly reconciliation that our bookkeeper was having to do. Poor thing. So just, you know, imagine. Anyway, so we're running all the invoices through QuickBooks. If you're running the money through the foundation, at least, or through the subsidiary, you're running, you invoice through QuickBooks in all the currencies. And then that invoice goes out to QuickBooks. And then when we receive payment, we just go in there and click, click, click. And then QuickBooks talks to the budgets plugin and sends a little email to whoever made that invoice and says, hey, you got paid. Go put your sponsor up. The end.
Nice.
It's super smooth.
And all this is handled behind the scenes with WordPress.
Mm-hmm. Well, WordPress talking to QuickBooks, but yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And then we have this other awesome thing that Constantine built, which is ridiculous, but we got WordPress. Well, WordPress. All of the vendor invoices, vendor payment requests, and the reimbursement requests, we also download those into a CSV, and then we upload those to our banking site, and then those go out all in one, which is amazing, because it used to be that we had to like manually cut paste or hard type in every single wire transfer, every single check that we cut. We had to type in every single payment. And now, I mean, it scales so beautifully. You still spend some time paying bills, but the amount of time you spend paying one bill is the same amount of time you spend paying 16 bills, because it's all in a Google spreadsheet that you upload, or in a CSV file that you upload, and it's awesome.
And speaking of the team helping to build these tools, I think it's Constantine Kovshenin, and then Ian Dunn, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I don't know, are there any more?
Nope, that's it. That's all we got.
That's all you got, but they're cranking away there. And
they're doing a great job, yeah.
One of the nice things I saw, and I wrote about this on the Tavern, is that the WordCamp organizers, or actually, before we get to that, I want to talk about this deputy program, because I think this is pretty cool. But there's this thing called a deputy program where people can get involved with helping organizers organize their work camps, do the processing, and kind of be a liaison between the organizer and the people behind the scenes of WordCamp Central. Tell us a little bit about the deputy program and then how people can get involved.
Well, the deputy program is super awesome and amazing. It is a way that people can volunteer on the community team kind of all year round. It used to be that if you were on the community team, you had your WordCamp, and then you were doing your monthly meetup, sure. But if your monthly meetup, if you weren't as active on your monthly meetup, or your monthly meetup had a whole bunch of people, you had this kind of fallow period, right? Where, outside of your WordCamp, you had all this knowledge and all this experience, but not really anything to do with it. And so we have this, lots to do with it, but maybe no one was asking you for help. So we opened the floodgates and said, help! We started this deputy program at the end of 2014, beginning of 2015.
But was that around the time where was it either you or Jen made the announcement that you and Jen would be stepping away from the organizing situation and let the deputies take over? And when you guys stepped down, was it just, were you burnt out?
You know, a little bit.
I mean, after everything you're telling me, I'd be burnt out eons ago.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot. I had been working on WordCamps by then for about 3 years. And so going into my fourth year, I was like, my experience organizing WordCamp San Francisco, that was in 2014, was an amazing experience. And one of the things that gave me the greatest joy was helping build that blogger track. And I was so, so proud of that blogger track. Just talking to Jen, and Jen and I have been friends for 20 years plus, but both of us got really excited about this idea of, like, how can we bring that, how can we create a conference space for people who aren't developers, aren't designers, are people who use the product, who use WordPress, and who want to know how to use WordPress better to amplify their voice. And so we came up with this idea of this conference called Press Publish, where we were reaching out specifically to WordPress.com users and Jetpack users, and Automattic very kindly allowed us to experiment with it, because again, we're WordPress and we experiment. And we did a couple of events at the beginning of 2015. They were really fun. I'm super proud of those events. They were really high quality events. The attendees had a great
one
time.
One was in Phoenix and the other was in Portland. Portland. Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then at the end of that, we, stepped away and then moved back to the community team. We talked on and off about revisiting it. And it just kind of hasn't fired anyone up enough again to bring that back to life. But it was a great experience, and I'm really glad that I did it, for sure. And the deputy program kind of was born at that same time. We discussed it specifically at the community summit in 2014 in San Francisco.
So we're almost halfway through 2016. So the deputy program has been involved for well over a year, about a year and a half now. And what sort of improvements or, say, reduced strain on the overall system have you seen because of this deputy program?
Well, the mentorship program in particular is fantastic. We have a lot of deputies who mostly mentor WordCamps. So rather than a staff member at WordCamp Central also mentoring new organizers, we have these wonderful people who have organized events, organized WordCamps before, who can check in with mentor, with new organizers or experienced organizers too, because we all need somebody, you know, checking in and making sure that we're on time and doing stuff. And also just reminding people, hey, remember there's this new tool? You didn't use it last year because it didn't exist, but it's here now and it's awesome, so use it. So basically, you know, decentralizing that advice and mentorship. And being all the so many more people being the voice of WordCamp Central, it's fantastic. And then we also have people who help out with vetting applications. As you know, we're really, really careful and deliberate about the people that we approve as community organizers of official events. And then we have people also who do budget reviews, who look through a proposed budget for a WordCamp and advise them and let them know what they are sure will work or what might not work and this and that. And we have some deputies who ship swag, all sorts of things. And this is not just with the WordCamp program, but also with our meetup program as well. So, and then of course people answering questions in the Slack, in our Slack channel of events and outreach, is also wonderful. The amount of organizers we have helping organizers now is, it just warms my heart. It's wonderful.
And the reason why I wanted to talk about the deputy program first is because there was an update earlier this year, back in April, where WordCamp Central added a page where now people can see the application status for a particular WordCamp. And due to some efforts to the back end of the website, now deputies can... This is cool. You get all these custom post statuses where you can mark a application as to a specific status at which point of the process it's in. So it needs to be vetted, or the budget review needs to happen, or it's been scheduled. So there's a lot of neat little cool tools in the whole, in that sort of process that's been added to the Central WordCamp Central website.
Yeah, we had a lot of people doing a lot of work and having a lot of miscommunications.
I can imagine.
Google spreadsheets. Going to be the death of me. And our spreadsheets just kept getting more and more out of control. And I have to say, the theme of this year is solving problems with WordPress instead of Google Docs.
that's like the overall mission. Kill the spreadsheet.
Pretty much, yeah, yeah, pretty much. In fact, right now we're working on building a tool that will pull WordCamp budgets into the back end as well. So everything will live on WordPress.org servers, and everything will be in one place, and I couldn't be more excited about it. I'm so thrilled.
So I wanted to get your take on some of these cool numbers that were published earlier this year, and it was pretty interesting looking over these stats that you published. And you know, I was surprised to see that. Well, not really surprised that WordCamp US is one of the largest WordCamps, but in the world, Tokyo was right up there. I didn't realize WordCamp Tokyo was so large.
Tokyo is huge.
But Some of the interesting data points is that there were 366 first-time organizers, there were 952 first-time speakers, and it was also interesting seeing the total number of unique speakers. So there's about 1,677. So it was just kind of interesting looking at all these numbers, and of course most of them, the stats have been tracked since 2011. Almost every one of them is on an upwards climb. But you know, we go from 52 WordCamps in 2011, now we're up to 89, and you say that looks like we're probably going to hit 100 or more this year.
I'm nearly positive we're going to hit 100 this year. We've had 20 so far this year. We've got 3 WordCamps coming up this weekend, Maine, St. Louis, and Porto. We have 43 events on the official schedule right now, and we have 44 events on the planning schedule. And keeping in mind that we do have events that fall off of the planning schedule every so often, but if none of the events fall off of the planning schedule, and if no more events are added to the schedule, which some are going to be added, I know for sure, we're looking at like 107 right now. So that's a big jump.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things to me is that the average number of attendees is slightly down in 2015 than it was in 2014. And you say that maybe this seems to be an observation that WordCamps, that we're seeing more events, but they're having smaller attendee counts. And is that sort of the trend you're seeing? I mean, that seems like a pretty good trend to me, because I really enjoy those camps with 300 people or less.
I think that, yeah, what we are starting to encourage, especially first-time organizers and communities that aren't sure that they can have a WordCamp, from our perspective, if you want to use, software terms, right, the minimum viable product for a WordCamp, right? What do you have to be a WordCamp? Our MVP is 50 people in a room all day talking WordPress, you know? So if you can get 50 people in a room to talk about WordPress all day, that's what we would consider a WordCamp. You don't need lots of tracks. You don't need multiple days. Our expectation is 50 people or more, right? And the idea is that with that expectation, hopefully more communities can have their own event. Not that anybody, that we should cap it at a certain size, but that, a WordCamp, a suburb of Portland could have their own small WordCamp, and then Portland could have its WordCamp. And little towns in certain states or countries.
Fewest tickets sold for a single WordCamp in 2015, WordCamp East Troy at 26.
Right, yeah. They were going for 50, but they didn't quite make it. But yeah, I mean, when we are, and I think it's good for us to see more people experimenting with smaller events and also experimenting with different formatted events. It doesn't have to be top down, one person listening to, five people listening to one person talk for 2 hours or something like that. It can be on conference, it can be roundtables, it can be workshops, all these ideas. But yeah, I mean, the thing that always breaks my heart is when someone says, well, we only get 30 people at our meetup every month, so we're just not ready for a WordCamp. And I'm like, no, you are so ready for a WordCamp. I mean, a WordCamp is supposed to be the annual celebration of a local community, of a local meetup. And so by kind of letting organizers understand how modest and informal they can do it without, I think it, again, just like we opened up WordCamps 5 years ago to people who didn't have a certain financial status, this clarifying of expectations makes it so we're opening up WordCamps to more communities that maybe don't have that many people in them, or that communities where the number of volunteer hours they have to throw at a WordCamp maybe isn't 400, volunteer hours. So maybe they just don't have the volunteer staff for a 200 or 300 person WordCamp. Maybe they just have the volunteer staff to put together a more modest event, and that's okay. Those are also WordCamps.
Some of the cities are putting together, I think it was Seattle, where they had a WordCamp Seattle beginners. And then at some point later in the year, they had WordCamp Seattle advanced users. So they had two different WordCamps for two different audiences, and that seemed to work out well.
Yeah, I'm not sure that they're going to do that again this year, but they were experimenting with that idea. With bigger cities, you really run into a problem with trying to find a reasonably priced venue for really large communities. Seattle's a great example where it's just super, super hard for them to find a venue that allows them to keep a really lean event budget. And bigger cities like, again, Manhattan,
New York.
New York, Chicago, Miami is in an enviable position with their deal with their venue. But, there's plenty of other communities out there that really struggle with expensive venues. And, I mean, we certainly don't want to not have a WordCamp, right? So Seattle and Toronto has also experimented with this idea of just breaking up the WordCamp into two pieces and having two different events. And yeah, I mean, we like to try new things and see if it
sticks. What do we have to do? We've had all these WordCamps in the U.S., but we still have states that haven't had a single WordCamp. Alaska, Montana, Wyoming, and I almost want to say Idaho, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, we haven't had an event in Idaho. You are right.
I really want a WordCamp to happen out there. Somebody needs to organize one.
For that matter.
And Boise's got to be big enough for a WordCamp.
Right?
Yeah.
Meetup in Boise? Now I need to look.
Did you say Indiana? Hasn't had a... Wow. I thought Indiana had at least one.
I'm saying, no, they have not.
Oh, wow. That's an outlier. If anyone's listening in those areas, please, you know, get something started. I would love to go to a WordCamp in Wyoming.
The barbecue at a WordCamp Wyoming.
Oh, do an actual WordCamp, but do the actual camping part in the mountains. Well, maybe that's a bad idea. We'd have to get liability for like bobcat attacks or something.
That might be a challenge, but I'm willing to try. I don't even see a Boise WordPress meetup yet.
Oh man.
So that's depressing. Only over 50 people are interested. In case you're listening in Boise, let me know. We will help you set up a meetup. We want to help.
So Andrea, I want to switch gears on one thing. And if I could play the harp music for the Wayback Machine and play the clip of the last time that you were on the show, I would love to do that.
But
when we had last spoken, you had mentioned some things about live streaming in terms of advancement in WordCamp, and quite possibly the goal was to stream every camp or as many as that we could. What advancements have we made on that front lately?
Well, we have about three. We have an account now, a WordCamp Central account with livestream.com. We have three different accounts. I guess you have to have three different accounts to be able to stream three different tracks. So we have three. And we have three camera kits that are specifically set up with equipment that works really well with livestream.com. And if WordCamps want to live stream, those kits live in the U.S. I have not, to my knowledge, we have not been approached by anyone in Europe who is looking for foundation equipment that would allow them to live stream. But if they did, we would certainly want to talk to them about it and see what we could come up with. But we have yet to see. We have the technology, but it hasn't really taken off. And I have some theories about why, but I have no actual hard data. Live stream is like putting a conference on top of a conference almost, and so. In my observation, if you have some people in your community who are really passionate about doing live stream right, then you can stream, but it really adds complexity to your event. And since these are volunteer organized events, the more complexity you add, the larger number of volunteer hours and commitment you ask everyone to do. So I still think it's amazing, and I still think it's wonderful, and I support everyone who wants to do a live stream at their event, but I encourage them to make sure they have the staff for it, and also, quite frankly, the bandwidth. you have to have some pretty robust pipes to make sure that you're streaming with, you know, the correct amount of bandwidth. So sometimes that is a challenge, considering that we usually go for as close to free or cheap venues as possible so that our organizers aren't burdened with incredible fundraising goals. So that's kind of where we are.
Okay, so it's definitely in the works and in the plotting. It's just capacity and logistics on in terms of where the WordCamps are held to make sure that they can hold that, plus the addition of the volunteers that can actually man that position.
Yeah, I mean, we have this. We have the equipment. We have all the accounts. There's nothing standing in anyone's way other than their local, the venues internet access and their volunteer staff.
Okay. So what's typically, even though, okay, so let's take live stream out of the equation. Mm-hmm. In terms of everything being recorded and all that, what's the standard lag time between when a WordCamp occurs and when some of that footage actually gets submitted and then goes to WordCamp TV? Do you have any of those statistics?
I don't have those stats at hand, but you know who you ought to get on the show is either Michael Wigington, who is one of our most dedicated volunteers on the WordPress TV team, and mm-hmm. he is a retiree, loveliest man you've ever met. Also, Jerry Bates, also known as Jerry Sarcastic, and Jerry is super fun to talk to. Y'all would have a great time with him. I would highly suggest you pull one of those, or there's lots of other great people on that team, Kyle.
I know John Parkinson does it too.
John is amazing and wonderful. Yeah, they've got a really robust team. Makes my little heart flutter when I think of how we got them all together so many years ago. They've just taken off. So yeah, I'd get somebody on the WordPress TV team and get some stats out of them. I do not have those at hand, but we've made a lot of improvements there too. So
I know from my experience that it's all. It really comes down to how fast can the volunteer, whoever is in that position of the video, upload the content that's on those flash drives to WordPress.tv for the team to process them.
Yeah, but you know what we do have now with this huge team of moderators is we have volunteer post-production people. So you don't even need to do WordCamps who don't have people who can do the post-production on their raw footage can upload that raw footage to, I believe it's an Amazon's cloud installation, and our WordPress TV moderators and volunteers will do post for the WordCamps. So that's amazing, I think. I mean, that saves a lot of WordCamps, a lot of work, and a lot of fundraising work, too, if they were trying to hire somebody to do that.
So I know we have to wrap it up with you very soon here, but the one last thing I wanted to talk to you about is something that we recently wrote about on the Tavern, and it's about this incubator program. Tell us about this experimental WordCamp incubator program and what the goal of it is.
So, again, we just like to keep trying new things. What we're doing with this incubator program is we are trying to reach out to communities where they've had a hard time pulling their community together, or if they just, for whatever reason, they haven't been able to organize that first WordCamp. Maybe they don't even have a meetup together yet. But there are some people who are really excited about WordPress in that community, and they want to put it all together and create a WordPress community in that area. And so the idea behind the incubator program is that some WordCamp Central staff and deputies will be reaching out. So people in all over the world applied. We had like 182 applications, I think. And we winnowed them down. And we are looking at a short list of, if I recall correctly, about 15, give or take a couple.
15 or 16. I mean, we're looking at San Jose, Costa Rica, Kenya, Nigeria, Hungary, Zimbabwe, places like that.
Yeah. And we... When we lost Jen earlier this year, we had to kind of rejigger some of our plans.
Lost Jen because she moved on. She's no longer working for Automatic. Not that anything happened to her.
For Automatic. Yeah, sorry. when we lost her from the team, we had to change some of our plans just due to staffing. And so the plan is now to incubate two communities. And then to recruit some deputies to give what I'm calling, I need a better term for this, so if y'all think of one, please let me know, to intensively mentor a few additional communities. Because there are some communities on that list that like have a meetup group and just need to get a little extra help getting their WordCamp together. And then there are some communities on that list that don't even have a meetup group, right? So, and then some have a meetup group, but it's not a WordPress group, or some have a meetup group, but it's not on the chapter account. And, you know, so there's all sorts of different levels of kind of nascent communities there.
If we could just get them to organize a one day, you know, maybe one track camp, something very small, it would give them a foundation, hopefully, to build upon for something more organized, or they could do it on their own, or at least so they have gone through the process to possibly do it again the following year.
Exactly. And the specific goal of the incubator program is not to help a community have a 500-person event first time out. The goal is to create an event, a WordCamp for them, that is easily reproducible for any volunteer who come, or any community member who comes to the WordCamp to look around, is like, well, I've never organized an event before, but I feel like I could organize this or something maybe a little more elaborate than this. Like, this seems like something I could do, we could do again on our own. So that's the point, to create an event that's modest and easy to do again so that the community can do it again. So we're just hatching baby chicks here, just teensy tiny baby chicks, not big chickens.
which is just kind of funny, because when Sarah Gooding wrote about the article, she used a little baby chick as a featured image.
You're incubating. It's an incubator. So that's the idea. We'll be announcing the locations next week, and I expect that's one of the reasons that I know we'll have at least a couple more events on our planning schedule soon. And I'm really excited about it. I think it's going to be, just going through all the applications and stuff, it's been super fun to kind of get to know some communities that are trying to put, you know, get to that critical mass, whatever they consider that. It's going to be great.
Well, that's it's a pretty cool program, and I can't wait to read about the successes and some of the things learned once these areas have their first event. Hopefully later on this year.
Maybe there'll be spectacular failures, and we'll be like, never do that again.
That's all part of the experimental process, right?
Exactly. But I hope that we'll look back and be like, yeah, I'm glad we did that.
So I want to thank you very much for spending some quality time here on the show, giving us an update on all things WordCamps. I know that there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes, a lot of paper pushers or mouse clicking or copying, things of that nature, budgets. I mean, it's just and it's just sort of mind-boggling to me that the WordCamp Central and the subsidiary and the people behind it are helping to organize camps across the world. I mean, it's like you're the nerve center, but even camps in Germany and Tokyo, Japan, and just anywhere in the world, as long as they have an internet connection and can accept wire transfers, I mean, they could do business with the subsidiary and organize a WordCamp. So, I mean, it's just a great sort of thing that's been organized here.
It's pretty exciting to see how much support that we're able to provide to community organizers around the world. It's a program that I'm really proud to have been part of building, and that I am really excited about seeing how it continues to grow.
So for anybody who would like to continue following your work, or maybe stay abreast of what's going on with the WordCamp Central, or just events in general, where can they find that information?
Well, certainly, if you're interested in finding a WordCamp near you, you should go to central.wordcamp.org and learn all about where upcoming WordCamps are coming. Or if you've applied to organize an event and you're wondering what's happening with your application, you can go there too, because we've got a great little list of all the applications that we're looking at right now. And then if you're interested in getting more involved with the WordPress Open Source Projects community team, with the group of amazing volunteers who organize monthly meetup groups as well as annual WordCamps every year, you should go to make.wordpress.org/community, and that's where you see, that's kind of our desk of everybody making official WordPress events. And you'll get to see how the sausage is made, as they say.
Great analogy. So, thanks again for coming on the show. All the best to you. And we'll have to have you on here maybe in the next few months. So, because there's always new things going on over there at WordCamp Central. So,
we are a restless and busy bunch. So, yeah, always happy to come back. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Andrea.
All right. Thanks, Marcus.
Hello, everybody. That was Andrea Middleton. Always enjoy having her on the show and learning about all things going on in the WordPress event community. And Marcus, as we've learned, there has been some progress there on your live streaming kind of inquiry where, I mean, WordCamp Central has the equipment. They just need the people, the volunteers, to step up and say, hey, they want it, and the venue that they're in has to be able to support it. And there you go. It can happen. So I guess what you need now is it's not so much about the equipment, but your call for people to volunteer their time and to do the live stream part so you can watch it from your house.
Yeah, and I think that should be kind of a minimum category when it comes to, or a requirement actually, from those who are organizing WordCamps to make sure that they have a live stream that's involved in it. And I think that's a trend that we all need to get on to make sure that, you know, we have a good audience for that. And then maybe even add somebody additionally that's tweeting some things and asking people to join the live stream and get involved in it. And that's a really good way to join and grow a local community of WordPress enthusiasts. And that only helps with the meetups week after week, or month after month, rather, as you go forward. So I encourage everybody that is involved in WordCamps in your local area, maybe that's a good position for you. Just volunteer to be the camera person and do the stream. You don't have to be a speaker. You don't have to be an organizer. You don't have to be somebody who hands out lanyards and swag and shirts and stuff. Maybe you want to get involved in the camera work of it and do something that will last for a long time on WordPress.tv. So I think that's a new category that we can encourage people to volunteer for, is to be a stream captain or a stream contributor. Or whatever it happens to be.
Yeah, I like that idea, stream captain. It's kind of a cool name. So it was great having her on the show. And Marcus, we sort of have, if he's there and ready, if he's not, as long as he's not overhydrated, we have a sort of a secondary guest on, a special guest that we had no intention. We had no idea that this was going to happen. However, he does tie in very nicely to be able to talk about WordCamps and actual events in other open source communities, because it's sort of his job to attend them.
Yes, and I'll tell you how this happened.
Yeah, go ahead and tell us how it happened and who he is.
So I'm in New Orleans right now in a hotel, and I pray that the Wi-Fi is holding up. You can tell me yes or no. But so I'm literally going down in the hotel to the gift shop to buy some water for my wife, who's attending with me. And I'm coming back from the gift shop, and I'm just kind of looking in the lobby, so to speak, and looking in the lounge area. And I see somebody, and I see him looking at an iPad, and I'm like, I know them. I know that guy. And it's Mendel Kerlin from GoDaddy, the GoDaddy evangelist. And I'm like, Mendel, what are you doing here? And so he's on the show to join us. He's in my hotel room live. This is the first time, Jeff, I think this has ever happened where somebody in person has been with us on WordPress Weekly. But it's Mendel Kerlin. Mendel, what the hell are you doing here in New Orleans?
Well, hello.
This is cool. He's using the same microphone, too.
Yeah, I got real close to it there. I hope that was a good announcer voice. Yeah, I'm here checking out DrupalCon. This is my fifth DrupalCon, third domestic and fifth overall. So yeah, I'm here doing that.
Now, over the years, I've known you as a WordPress evangelist, but then I've seen you publish articles about your experiences at these other open source events, and you're not just a WordPress evangelist for GoDaddy, and you've made it the point to just say you're GoDaddy's evangelist.
So it's like you can go to all these events, but it always ties back to GoDaddy. So that's the similarity. But so you've attended several WordCamps in your day, and now you've obviously attended some DrupalCons. I don't know if you've attended any Joomla Worlds yet, but
no Joomla Worlds.
No Joomla Worlds yet. But what, based on your experience, what are, I mean, you're there attending DrupalCon, and what can you tell us about some of the similarities and differences between how a typical WordCamp is versus one of these DrupalCons?
Yeah, well, so a DrupalCon, the best similar conference in the WordPress world, it would be, you know, WordCamp US or WordCamp Europe. So the two different types of DrupalCons I've been to are DrupalCon Europe. Last year, it was in Barcelona, and then DrupalCon US, which obviously is in New Orleans. You know, they also have Drupal camps, which are very similar to WordCamps. And
is that what you attended in LA, Drupal Camp, or was that a DrupalCon?
Was I at the one in LA?
Yes, you were.
I think so. Listen, it's been a long year, but.
And it's May.
it is May. So the most recent one I dropped in at and fresh in my memory is MidCamp. And so they name their Drupal camp in Chicago MidCamp because it's in the middle of the country. They're similar by name and they're similar by concept, right? So it's a place for communities to get together. But I don't necessarily know that they're altogether similar in format.
Versus, you know, tracks and sessions throughout the day?
Yeah. So the one, I guess there are some stark differences. And you're right, I did write about this on the Tavern, actually.
Go figure.
I think I did a guest post. I don't know if you've heard of the Tavern. but you know, there's so many interesting things, nuances within the communities. And, you know, I know you asked me about the difference between WordCamps and Drupal camps, but there's actually something else that's pretty interesting. And that's Dries, who's the founder of Drupal. He has been talking a lot about onboarding and users using Drupal more and more and onboarding users and helping to support users with a lot of functionality that's very similar in some ways to the customizer, some front-end editing capabilities and things like that for content and stuff. And so the differences and similarities are stark in not only the project, but also the camps and the cons as well.
Yeah, and I think I don't know if it was yesterday, but did you attend Dries's? I think he does State of Drupal, or does a Drupal address where he kind of talks about.
Yeah, he does one of those every time. He does it's called the Dries Note.
Oh, okay. Did he do one at New Orleans?
Yeah, he did one in New Orleans. Yeah, he does them at every one. They actually have which is always kind of a glitz and glamour sort of theatrical production, teasing the new features and things like that, and poking fun a little bit at funny things that have happened in the past year. Dries comes on and kind of talks about his the future of Drupal and the current state of Drupal, kind of similar to how Matt does the state of the word. And again, one of the themes, I don't know if you watched it or not, Jeff, but, you know, one of the themes was that onboarding idea or that user idea. So,
well, which is kind of funny because Matt talks about the same thing. And then when he talks about it, he mentions Jetpack and how Jetpack is a key cornerstone or foundational element of WordPress being able to reach 30, 40, even 50% market share, because it's going to help customer onboard new users. It's going to help create sort of that great new user experience. So he's sort of on the same mindset.
Yeah, I mean, listen, at the end of the day, we we have these projects for a few reasons, right? One of those reasons is to provide valuable tools to businesses and enterprises and people that are building sites for other people, right? So that's one. And the other thing is for the sake of the community, for the sake of creating something awesome or interesting or creative or free and open. And I think everybody within each project is super laser focused on the success of that project. And so, I imagine Dries sees this opportunity to really see some more success in Drupal. It's been very, very successful with enterprise as a platform, and small businesses, by the way, development shops and agencies and things like that, they use Drupal to build sites for everybody from, a mom and pop fish shop in the middle of New Orleans to some of the biggest sites on the internet. So the idea of small business or large business is not foreign to Drupal creators. And I think Dries just sees additional opportunity for the project, which is pretty cool. I love the idea that we can all thrive in what is an incredibly large market.
And what's just curious, what's the vibe like there? What's the vibe that you pick up from the attendees and the people that are there in that room, all surrounded, all sort of sharing their passion for Drupal?
Yeah, it's a little, I would say it's a little more formal, is the feeling that you might get if you go to a Drupal con as opposed to a WordCamp US or Europe. Although I'll say it's really interesting to kind of tread the line between these two communities, because in the WordPress world, WordCamp US is starting to mature a bit and seem a little more formal. You see more people showing up with suit coats and holding business meetings during the actual event. Same type of thing at DrupalCon, although of course in my trademark style, I like to walk around with flip flops and a breezy shirt on, and
sometimes a big old cowboy hat.
Yeah, exactly right. I think as far as vibe, that's the vibe. But everybody's friendly. People are very willing and excited to share their knowledge, and the talks are. The talks are brilliant. The meetings are great. The people are super geeky, like they are in the WordPress community. So, everybody's kind of the same when it comes to that.
I've been to my fair number of WordCamps, as have you, and every now and then, jokingly, someone may take a pot shot and make a Drupal joke or a Joomla joke, and people around us sometimes find that funny. Have you heard any jokes like that about WordPress or other projects that I'm just wondering if the same thing happens at some of these camps, like if you've overheard any?
Well, I can tell you a joke if you want. So here it goes, because hey, we're on the air, and I'm sure there are a million people listening, and it's two short jokes and a long joke. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, sure. Let's go.
All right, joke. No, the fact is, I don't. People joke all the time about different communities. Just because people are loyal to what they believe in, what they earn their income from, what they make a living, what they support their families by doing. I'm not a huge proponent of cross open source community jokes, because. I'd hate for somebody to think that we're trying to, propagate any sort of ill will towards another community. I think everybody's kind of clawing to do the best they can. So, I don't know. I'm not gonna propagate anything any worse than the joke that I just told. So,
yeah,
I am
not funny.
I am. I'm not going.
Not funny.
I'm not going to DrupalCon. Forget those guys, man.
Yeah, Marcus. Trust me. We all know how you feel about Joomla. Jeez, all the fan mail we got after your comments about Joomla. I don't want to go through that again.
I still feel the same way, so keep the mail coming. I don't care.
Well, there you have it, folks. I just thought it'd be great to have someone on that's visited some of these other open source camps, especially like in the Drupal world, just to find out what it's like in that neck of the woods. So it's a great perspective, sort of a great sort of segue out of our conversation with Andrea about all things WordCamps, huh?
Well, I want to know one other thing because this is important here. So, Mendel, you've spoken at how many WordCamps?
Many.
How many? Like 10?
Yeah, something like that, sure.
Okay. What do you think WordCamps need in terms of speakers? Like, is the content too bland? Is there things going on? Like, is it the same talks, WordCamp to WordCamp? You go to WordCamps, so you know. I mean, what are we lacking right now? What for those of those listening out there, what's the holes in terms of content, in terms of showmanship, whatever it happens to be in terms of being a speaker, what's missing right now?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. So as a whole, the WordPress and Drupal for that matter, they're fairly immature communities as far as, you know, length of time that these things have been around. They're maturing, right? But they're not, you know, it's not, you know, Linux, right? Or something like that. So when I hear people talk at WordCamps, there's inconsistency when it comes to presenting a standard set of facts, right? You know, the IP system works this way, or the DNS system works this way, or hosting works this way, or these are different attributes of different types of products or services or whatever. So I see that, and presentation skills vary quite a bit. Something that I've played around with, you know, just in concept, with some people is an idea of having some sort of repository for, vetted content that can be presented, and taken and then made its own, you know, in the presenter's voice, just kind of serving as a base amount of knowledge or a base for presenting a particular topic. So,
do you mean like a wiki? What do you mean?
Yeah, kind of like a wiki, but something a little more curated. So something that, you know, might not change once the topics are set and the subject matter in the actual you know, slide deck is set or something like that. But basically, open source standard information. If you're talking about getting people started on WordPress and installing, you know, vanilla WordPress or something like that, that it would be standard, instead of, you know, everybody taking their own bias and putting it in there. Now, whether that's a good idea or a bad idea, I don't know. But I will say I've heard misinformation at some, during some WordPress talks. And that's something that has been disturbing to people that have been attending with me, and they're, you know, we've talked about, hey, how do we help this person level up without, you know, embarrassing anybody or you know, causing any grief. So I would say those are the two things. And really what it boils down to is consistency.
Right? So are you saying that there have been presentations that, or sessions that you've listened into and you're thinking in the back of your head, man, what that guy just said is a load of crap.
Well, that's the Jeff way of interpreting my own thoughts, I guess. I would say you know, I've
thought that's crossed my mind in some of the sessions I've attended. I'm like, what is this person talking about?
Yeah, we'll just say factually inaccurate. There are certain cases where I've thought, boy, I really wish I would have raised my hand and mentioned to the crowd that was being educated there that actually was inaccurate information, so inaccurate that it could have caused somebody to spend more money or more time or do things wrong for a client or something like that. And so there's this conflict, you know, do we raise that issue in front of everybody and make that person, you know, feel rotten for presenting it? Do we wait until afterwards? Do we, you know, do we do something else systemic? And so that's something that's been on my mind as I look at presenters. By the way, if I ever say something factually inaccurate in a presentation, I am giving everybody 100% permission. Now I'm going to regret this because somebody's going to stand up and say something crazy.
I hope I'm not first.
You know, stop me and you know, tell me or come up to me afterwards and tell me, you know, but make sure that people are aware. So.
And what I'll do a follow-up question that's, I don't know, kind of in a similar vein, but out of all the camps you've attended, have you attended or seen something done at a WordCamp that you just said, wow, this is so cool or so informative that I think probably all WordCamps or WordCamp attendees at all the different camps would benefit from this?
Yeah, I'm actually going to pull another quick one on you and say the thing I want to bring up is something they do at Drupal events. And that is that there's this concept called birds of a feather. And birds of a feather groups are an opportunity to talk about any type of topic, something that's a burning question, something that is an issue or a curiosity. This could be anything from, you know, as far as WordPress is concerned, hey, how do I, how do I add features to the customizer? Or it could be something as simple as, hey, you know, we want to get all of the women in WordPress together to talk about women in WordPress and any issues that come along with that, right? And so, I think something that we could take from the Drupal community is that rallying around these specific types of groups or issues or thoughts or concepts, because it's really beautiful. They regularly have. Last night there was an event for women in Drupal, and everybody met up at DrupalCon at a bar, and it was or a restaurant or whatever. I wasn't there, but I saw it on the schedule, and they do it every single time. They also have new to Drupal. Right. So they do that as well. So if you're new to Drupal, you can network with other new people. Mm. So it's interesting.
So how big is DrupalCon in terms of attendance? How many people go?
Big.
No, come on. come on. How many?
Boy.
I could fill up an escalator. I know that much. I saw this.
We were in New Orleans, so yeah, it's got to be something. How much?
Listen, it's a big convention hall, but I would say it's, a few thousand people.
A few thousand,
maybe coupled a few. I don't know what the exact count was. I would know if I looked online because I think I wrote about it the last time. But it's a significant amount of people that have descended on this town. And my first one was in Austin, and the conference hall was packed. I mean, it was awesome.
Okay, so I want to dive deeper into this. Now you're an evangelist for GoDaddy, obviously. Yeah. Now, what are you doing here? I mean, I know that Drupal is a part of GoDaddy and some of the, quick installs and things like that. How much of a market is it for GoDaddy in terms of even warranting your representation here?
Yeah, so Drupal is a significant community, and they're doing significant work to build a platform that's used by small businesses who are our bread and butter customers. That's who comes to GoDaddy day in and day out to purchase sites and build sites for their local businesses. And people hear about the different quote unquote brands in the open source community. Some of those are WordPress. Some of those people hear about WordPress. Some of those people hear about Drupal. Some of those people hear about Joomla, all these different things. And we have a considerable install base of Drupal. And so what I'm here to do is to be present and listen and work with the Drupal Association to figure out how to make our hosting even better for Drupal. In the same way that we come to the WordPress community and we say, hey, listen, we want to make the world a better place for WordPress developers, and yeah, so that's that's why I'm here, and that's why I continue to keep the conversation open. Today, you know, I was talking with somebody about figuring out how to help small businesses that install an installation of Drupal or an installation of WordPress or Joomla or you know, whatever it is, to make sure that install is upgraded, right? And mm-hmm. And I know that that's something that hosts in the WordPress world are interested in too. And it's an interesting problem that we are always looking to solve better, and we can learn from all sorts of communities on how to solve those problems, right? So,
you know, that's something interesting you bring up, and I know this is probably contrary to what a lot of people would want to happen, but we've already seen it. It's already sort of happening where these web hosting companies are getting sick of outdated WordPress sites hosted on their networks and servers being exploited, that they're sort of taking it upon themselves now to create these various scripts to update all the software and bring it up to date, you know, like Bluehost did for their WordPress installs across their network. And I think in the future, I mean, it used to be that you could, I mean, I know WordPress has an automatic update system built in, but that's for point releases. But we're talking about web hosts, especially managed WordPress web hosts that will automatically do the major updates for you as well. And I think at some point in the future, that's just going to be a standard feature among all web hosting companies, is that you're just going to have automatic updates. And I know there's some people out there who will be able to modify those, modify them to disable them or have more control of them. But I think out of the box for a new install, the web host is going to turn on automatic updates. So I don't know. I think that's just a trend we're seeing. I think it's going to happen. Maybe, I don't know, maybe Mendo wants to weigh in on that.
Yeah, I mean, we already do it for our managed WordPress product, right? So when you get a managed WordPress website at GoDaddy, you have automatic updates turned on through our platform. It's managed a little bit though, so that if you know, we check updates, we make sure that they're going to work within our infrastructure. We test them with different types of sites, and then we roll that to the entire infrastructure. The other side of things is the shared hosting world, where anybody can install whatever they want, right? And that's something that was designed for developers, designers, freelancers, entrepreneurs, people that just wanted to play around, make a website, an HTML website for a friend or a family member. That's where they go to do it. And so the curiosity is, does it make sense to work with those accounts or those customers to say, hey, you're on an outdated version of WordPress or Drupal, or, you know, insert open source project here. Maybe it's OS Commerce or something like that. You know, you might consider upgrading, and here are the really good reasons why you might want to do that. So those are interesting questions, interesting things to figure out, interesting problems to solve, and we're solving them every day. We have I know this, it might sound a little self-promotional, but we're a pretty rockin' web host at this point, and we're just always looking for ways to level up. So if we can learn from a community and figure out how to make life better for those small businesses that, you know, might not know about a, you know, point release or a major update or something like that, then boy, let's do it. You know, let's help them.
Yeah, let's rise the tide of secure websites.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Well, man, I want to thank you very much for sitting in Marcus's room and spending some time with us on the show. It was very cool for you to share your perspective on DrupalCon. That was great.
Hey, thanks a lot for allowing me to infiltrate your show tonight. It's been fun.
And I let you tell that corny joke.
Yeah.
You didn't have a choice, man. You didn't have a choice.
Now, I don't know about you, but, you know, Mendel, I've seen Mendel at, like, all these WordCamps, and, you know, he's kind of my buddy and stuff. So When I heard that he was here for DrupalCon, that CeeLo Green song just cued in my head. I'm like, what are you doing, man? What are you doing with Drupal? What are you doing driving around with Drupal? I don't like that. So I'm hoping he still
remembers. He's an evangelist. He has to be an equal opportunity to all open source projects, at least those that run on the GoDaddy network.
Listen, this is going to be the corniest but the truest, statement. GoDaddy loves open source, right? And we love the communities that are open source and are doing really awesome things. So I have love for everybody, enough to go around.
That's awesome. So, well, we were going to get into the news, but to hell with that. We've spent so much time on WordCamps and events. We'll get into the news. I mean, there's not really anything spectacular that's going
on. We got a point. Okay, let's go over real quick. Come on, we got time.
All right. We'll go over there's a point release that happened last week, WordPress 4.5.2. Patched two security vulnerabilities. No big deal, right? No, actually, it is kind of a big deal, but the automatic updates were pushed out, and apparently these vulnerabilities were actually not WordPress code itself, but they're in libraries that WordPress uses. So the PL upload library, which is used, that's how WordPress, that's that thing you see when you upload files through WordPress, and then the second is a reflected cross-site scripting vulnerability in MediaElement.js, which is a third-party library used for it generates media players of WordPress. So the WordPress team, along with the security researchers, worked with the maintainers of those libraries. And once they patched those, they added the patches to WordPress. And there you go. We have WordPress 4.5.2. So if you haven't updated yet, you should. And in fact, anytime there's a point release, they end up sending the patches all the way back down to the 3.7 branch, because that's the branch that initially introduced automatic updates. So if you're, as long as you're updated to the most recent point release of whatever branch you're on, you're pretty secure, at least with those security patches.
I would say so, yeah.
Other than that, I guess I should say that, and this isn't a big surprise to me, but we're learning that Automatic is protecting its Woo Themes of WooCommerce trademark. So, in fact, just a little news tidbit out there, a little trivia. Next Thursday, on May 19th, it'll be officially 1 year since Automatic acquired WooThemes, which is kind of interesting because it feels like it's been much longer than that with all the news and developments that's been going around the product and the company. But when Automatic acquired them last year, it not only gained employees, plugins, and themes, but it also gained the company's trademarks. And these trademarks include character marks of Woo, the different verified Woo Expert badges, logos, things of that nature. And as one particular company found out, Woo GPL, which is actually one of those websites where you can buy, or it's like a club, and you can get all these different premium extensions for one discounted rate. And it's not illegal because they're all licensed under the GPL, so you could resell them. But because they were using Woo in the domain and it was related to WooCommerce, Automatic sent them a cease and desist letter saying that they are infringing on the trademark. And Billy Ablett, the owner of Woo GPL, and while it wasn't a specific reason, but it was kind of a convenient way for them to shut down the website. And instead, they transitioned everything over to a new site called GPL Kit, which is like just Woo GPL rebranded. So that takes care of that situation. However, there is a style guide on the Woo Themes website. And if you are right now, I want to let you know that if you were involved in the WooCommerce cottage industry, which is growing by leaps and bounds every day, and you have a domain with Woo in it, you may want to double check this style guide and maybe even confirm with Automatic's trademark team whether or not your site or domain is violating the trademarks, because rebranding at this point in time, especially if you've been sort of in this WooCommerce business for a few years now, it could be pretty expensive and time-consuming to have to rebrand and go to a new domain. So you might lose SEO and all those backlinks, although redirects would fix that. But just a word out there that Automatic is just doing what any other company should be doing, and that is protecting people infringing on their trademarks.
What was the policy of the previous Woo owner in terms of this?
I'm not sure. I have no idea what AD or Mark Forrester or what their trademark policy was. I'm not even sure when the style guide was added to the page. I'd have to look up on the Wayback Machine. But there are some reports that people who are involved in the Woo commerce industry or the Woo themes industry with Woo in their domain name got approval, or they asked some people and they said it was okay. But now we're finding out, well, it's not really okay. And it's not just any domain with Woo in it, because that's not how trademarks work. Trademarks are very specific to use cases. So we're talking about Woo as it relates to e-commerce, especially in the WordPress ecosystem. So that's really what you got to look out for.
Well, that's anybody that's got anything to do with WooCommerce, right? You're going to use Woo. It's going to violate the trademark because that's what it's about, is WooCommerce. So you're out of luck.
Yeah, so you're just going to have to do they give a couple of examples here. For example, if you were going to do techwoo.com, that's fine. But if you did club.woo, that's not fine. And if you were going to do like bestwoothemes.com or woocommerceconsulting.com or the Woo Shop, all those are no-nos. Or at least you would have to get permission from the trademark holder, which is automatic, to be able to use those. And it's pretty much a similar situation that we have with the WordPress. You know, the WordPress Foundation owns the trademarks to WordPress. You can't use WordPress in your domain name. And a certain individual that we talked about last year found out the hard way that you're not going to win when it comes to automatic and using WordPress in your domain name. So just do yourself a favor. Respect the trademarks and really consider at least getting some clarification by automatic if you are in a situation of using Woo in your name and you're involved with WooCommerce, and just take care of it before, or you could just, you can ignore it and see what happens. I wouldn't ignore it. That's
right. No.
I don't have the pocketbooks.
Time for a rebranding for a number of companies, I'm sure.
Yeah. Just a switch to the domain. I don't know. See, at least with WordPress, you could do WP as a prefix, but in Woo or WooCommerce, what would you do? WC or
WU? I don't know.
Yeah, like Moo with the U with the two dots above it. Maybe you could do Woo. I wonder if you could do that.
I don't know. Maybe it seems like it discourages, development in that area, but I don't know. It seems like maybe you could get license it or something.
Yeah, who knows? So that's pretty much the big stories that's going on this week in WordPress news. Why don't we get to your plug-in picks of the week, Marcus, so we can wrap this thing up.
All right, man. Well, the first one out of the gate is called Disable WordPress Core Update Email. Very timely for our latest release here.
Well, at least it's not Disable WordPress Core Update.
Well, you know.
That would be bad.
There's plugins for that, too.
Yeah.
This is by Alex Moss. This is actually his 13th plugin. And what it does is it basically disables the default notification email sent by WordPress for all automatic core updates. So you simply activate the plugin and the disable notification takes place. So that's all you do. The next one is called Downgrade. Now this is by Graphic Edit out of the repository. This is their 9th plugin. And I just want to say this is not a suggested plugin in my book, in terms of everybody should use this, but here's what it does. It downgrades WordPress to a lower version. You get to select how far down the chain you'd like to go. I talk about this because sometimes if you've recently upgraded a plugin and you found, I'm sorry, upgraded WordPress and you find that plugins or certain ones aren't working the way that they should be, you find that there's an issue with your site, this is something that you can downgrade quickly to determine if that's actually the culprit in terms of the WordPress version that you're running. And that's a good opportunity to tell the developer of that plugin, hey, it's not working with the newest version, so you may want to upgrade some code there. So that's called Downgrade. Again, use that one sparingly, only as necessary.
It sounds like that plugin would be a lot more convenient than having to contact your host and have him restore a backup.
I think so, yes. And finally, we're speaking of WooCommerce. This is a very handy tool. It is called Woo Customer Insight. It is by Smack Coders. Very cute name there in the repository. This is their 14th plugin. And it basically provides really good insight on what your visitors are doing within the WooCommerce structure. So it allows you to see your the different pages that customers are visiting, where they're clicking, the time spent on different pages. It tracks events, page visits, you know, how much time. And it has this funnel graphic, which is pretty cool. They call it the opportunity funnel. And it lets you know exactly the number of visits, successful product purchases, tracks how your customers respond as they go through the site from landing pages and all that. Pretty cool feature. And it basically captures kind of where customers fall off or, you know, where there's some cart abandonment and gives you a real concise view of the different website areas that may be problems within your sales funnel and your sales process. Maybe these are products that people just don't want. And maybe you've got a side product that is selling a lot better. Maybe that's something that you should think about in terms of how you prioritize and place those different products within your website as well. So it really helps out with kind of tweaking the different areas of your site, making the purchase process really simple and easy for your customers. So really cool plugin. It's called Woo Customer Insight. It's free in the repository by Smack Coders. And those, Jeff, are my plugin picks of the week.
Fantastic. So next Wednesday, there's been a lot of changes going on at Envato around some pricing, some products, some launches, discontinuing the FlashDance site. We're going to have James Guru, I believe his name is. He's a community evangelist, knows everything going on over there in Envato. So he's going to stop by and talk to us all things Envato next week. We'll get an update on everything that's going on over there at that network.
Great.
At the various marketplaces. So it'll be very timely. With that it's going to wrap it up for this edition of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and all previous episodes on wptavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro. That's JEFFR0 on Twitter. And Marcus?
You can find me at my website, marcuscouch.com, and also at membershipcoach.com. And I'm having a mastermind call for, you know, Google Hangout with everybody that signs up next week. So make sure you go to membershipcoach.com for that. And you can follow me on Twitter at Marcus Couch.
No, I like to be smart enough to do a mastermind call.
Well, got to start you off somewhere. Come on in.
Yeah. So do me a favor. While you're down there, have a cocktail on me. Tell your wife I said hi. I already said hi to Mendel and hi to all those folks down in New Orleans. And everybody else, have a safe, enjoyable rest of the week. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday night, 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Take care.